Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is brand new cookbook author Hani Apfelbaum, who also has a very, very popular blog called Busy in Brooklyn. Good evening, Hani.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. A couple of weeks ago, I attended the book launch at Bison and Bourbon. You obviously have a very, very loyal group of followers because there was barely enough standing room. Very impressive.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
And the demo that you did there was all.
Yes.
The demo that you did was also quite impressive.
Thank
so
you.
So tell
much.
Me, you start out your book by saying that as a little girl you did everything possible to stay out of the kitchen. What suddenly changed?
Well, I got married and I had to feed my husband. So I didn't have much of a choice.
Yeah, but there is a difference between having no choice and actually becoming such a great cook.
Well, it evolved over time. It was a journey. At first when I got married, it was just about making basic dinners. And then we started inviting guests over, and I started really enjoying hosting Shabbos dinners. And I really looked at food more from an artistic perspective. Like, I liked, you know, plating the dishes and creating a beautiful tablescape and a table of different colors. I didn't really look at the food from a flavor perspective. So for me, I really came to food through styling and setting a beautiful table. So that's how it kind of piqued my interest. And then when all my friends started asking for my recipes, I realized, well, the way you get, you know, they always say, we eat with our eyes first. So that's how you get people interested in food. And plating is really important, but obviously I've got to get the flavor down pat too. So I kind of started getting into food and started reading, you know, cooking magazines and watching YouTube videos and reading blogs and, you know, getting into the cooking side of things. But it was an evolution.
Now, did you also do the photography in the book?
Yes, I did. And the same, like the cooking, I mean, when I started my blog 7 years ago, I've been blogging for 7 years, my photography was pretty embarrassing. And the same way my cooking evolved over time, my photography improved. And, you know, over the years, this got better and better. So it's just all about
the
practice.
The photography
it comes to food.
In the book,
yes.
The photography in the book is quite good.
Thank you very
much. In fact,
much.
A few
that.
Of the photographs almost made me feel like, you know, just reaching into the photograph and grabbing it, grabbing the food.
Yeah, I've actually heard that from some people, which is, it's a great compliment. And it's really just about, I feel like, you know, my journey, I love that, you know, sometimes people that have a blog, they go back to some old recipes and they reshoot them. But I love that people can go back to my old recipes and see that I used to be so bad at photography. And, you know, it just goes to show that with practice, we can get better at anything that we do. So it's just about, you know, working at it.
Now, some of the recipes are complete rebuildings, restructuring of the original traditional recipe. Why? Why would you do something completely different?
I feel like for the longest time, all the kosher cookbooks have all had another variation of chicken soup and stuffed cabbage and gefilte fish and potato kugel. And, you know, we live in a new time, and we live in a foodie culture. People are ready people want something fresh and exciting. I mean, we cook Shabbos dinner every single week. It comes once a week. We have so many yamim tovim. It's like, We need something to get us excited about getting in the kitchen again, and I feel like people are ready for that, and they want something fresh and new. And so many pictures that I'm getting from my followers are where they're putting little tabs on the pages. There's, like, so many tabs because, there's just so much, everything is new in the book that really hasn't been done before. And that's exactly what I wanted to bring to the table. It's just about fresh, new ingredients, introducing new flavors that people, you know, there's just so many ethnic ingredients on the kosher market these days, and people don't necessarily know how to use it. So that's what I'm trying to introduce in the book.
Well, you have succeeded quite well, let's face it.
Thank you.
Our palate in the 21st century is much more evolved than that of our parents in the 1950s and our grandparents at the early 1900s and before. We've been exposed through a whole slew of kosher restaurants. We've been exposed to different flavors from around the world. In fact, if you look at the history of Jewish food, in quite a few countries, what became the jewels of that country's cuisine have often been developed by Jews who have come from the Middle East, were used to certain dishes, could not find the proper ingredients, so they came up with new things. Like, for example, in Italy, the Roman cuisine prides itself for the famous carciofi alla Giudia, Jewish-style artichokes. Why is it called that? Precisely because it was developed by Jews. Having been in Italy, almost every major restaurant offers carciofi alla Giudia. And the same thing in quite a few other cities. A lot of the dishes have been developed by Jews. So in that sense, I think you follow the tradition more than just taking traditional dishes and redoing the architecture. You followed a proud tradition of Jews innovating the local food.
Thank you. It's interesting because I grew up Ashkenazi and I married into a Syrian family. So, you know, growing up, I really only understood one cuisine, which was, you know, Hungarian food. And I didn't really understand the whole Sephardic cuisine. But then when I married into a Syrian family, it really opened my eyes to a whole other food culture that I learned about. And you see different influences of those foods throughout the book, as well as, you know, Middle Eastern influences. My father's Israeli, and Asian influences, just because I love Asian food and Thai food. So really bringing all those ethnic flavors into the book was very important to me.
Now, your husband's name sounds like a German name, so you also must have been exposed to some German cooking.
Actually, my father-in-law is the child of survivors. So his parents were both survivors, and they had lost their families and married each other and had my father-in-law. So he grew up in Brazil. And so he doesn't have any Ashkenazi, German recipes that from his family. They mostly ate South American food. And my mother-in-law is from Argentina, so there was a lot of that South American influence in their home. Yeah. So there's empanada roll in the book. Different dishes that my mother-in-law, you know, taught me over time.
Mm-hmm. And did you make them as your mother-in-law taught you, or did you improve on them?
My mother was a very
basic
cook. Let's put
it differently. Did you modernize them?
Yeah, I mean, well, my idea, let's say, for empanadas was to do it as, like, kind of a deli roll, we're using puff pastry because it's just something easy for Shabbos. Obviously, the deli roll is something that people have been making for years, so I really wanted to do something different, so I did an empanada roll. So instead of, like, you know, the intricate, something else that was important for me in the book was that my recipes be very approachable, because if they're too difficult and time-consuming, people are just not going to make them. And me, myself, I'm a mother of five, so that's the way I cook. I cook food that tastes gourmet, but doesn't take a lot of time to make. So, you know, my idea of an empanada roll was, you know, taking the, you know, little handheld empanada pies and doing it in one giant roll instead of, you know, having to sit there and make each one and twisting them the way that they're made traditionally.
Now, let me ask you, what did you cook for Shavuos?
So I was actually cooking Shavuos recipes way before Shavuos because I was doing a lot of cooking classes and demonstrations and book signings leading up to Shavuos. So, you know, we definitely cooked our way through the dairy chapter and things like that. A few of the recipes that I worked on were the spring pea soup shooters. You know, often you find on Shavuos that people are eating very, very heavy dairy food. And a recipe that I came up with was a chilled spring pea shooter, since peas are in season and come in season in the spring. And it's a chilled soup as opposed to like the, you know, French onion heavy soup that people are used to eating on Shavuos. So that was very much well liked by a lot of people, and it has a very elegant presentation. And that one is on page. Let's find it. I don't know the page numbers by heart quite yet. That's on page 82. Another popular one was my roasted vegetable and goat cheese calzone buns with a red pepper dip, page 222. So people really love that because you actually, what I do is I roast the vegetables and the peppers on one sheet tray, and you end up getting two recipes in one because I incorporate the roasted vegetables in these buns, and then I take the peppers and I make a dip out of it. So that was another one that people liked a lot. And then another one that, you know, takes inspiration from ethnic cuisine are my baklava blintz bundles, which is a play on baklava with a cheese blintz filling. So it's cheesy and it has the nut mixture, and they're little phyllo bundles, which are really delicious and people really seem to love. So that's another great one.
And okay. What would you do on a Shabbos where you have a lot of guests?
So I always have my my basic dips on the table, which are my sweet chili eggplant and my tomato jalapeno dip. Those are on page 104 of the book. And I also do a Hawaij garlic confit, which is basically Hawaij is a Yemenite spice blend that is traditionally used to make Yemenite chicken soup. But what I did is I took inspiration from the soup and I made a garlic confit, which is basically a slow-cooked garlic in olive oil. And the garlic caramelizes and gets sweet and delicious, and it's so good over challah. So I add this Yemenite blend to the garlic cloves, and it's just so good to dip your challah in. So I always have that. That's page 106 at my meal. And then salads, you know, are very important for me to cook in the season. So it always depends, like, what vegetables are in season at the time. So I'll usually go to the supermarket and see, you know, what's new and what's fresh. But now is we're heading into spring and summer, and tomatoes are very in. I have a really good portobello mushroom salad with heirloom tomatoes that is really delicious. And a great also a marinated cauliflower salad that I love for Shabbos because you can prepare it like on Thursday because it marinates anyway and it gets better with age. So I love that. And what I really love to do for Shabbos day is make like a nice board. Charcuterie boards are so in right now. And in my book, I took one of my most famous recipes, what I'm known for on my blog, my Hasselback salami, which people make all over the world. They sell it at deli counters now. So I basically, since it was such a popular recipe, I made it three different ways, and I made a beautiful charcuterie board out of it. So on Shabbos, I really like to do that with different cold cuts and sausages, and dried salamis. People are very into serving on boards, and it's just an easy way to serve because you can put so many different components. And, you know, we're heading into summer. I feel like challah is so heavy and so hot. And I just like to serve, I prefer like a cold board as opposed to something like heavy like challah. So that's, I have this charcuterie board that you can use for inspiration and really, you know, go with it in any direction that you like. That's page 174.
We should have had you as a cook at the hotel where I was for Shavuot, so well. Now, let me ask you something. Do you ever pair things with wine?
So, honestly, I'm not like a wine, I'm not so into wine. I don't have such a great understanding of wine. I like Juness. That's my favorite. Maybe I'll get there at some point, but at this point in time, I mean, I like to use wine in my cooking, but I don't have a very deep understanding of wine and flavor pairings.
When you use wine in your cooking, do you use cooking wines or you use the actual wine?
Never. No, I would never use cooking wine, and I actually wrote it in my intro chapter where I have a whole chapter where I talk about, you know, how to cook millennial kosher and how to fill your pantry with different tools and ingredients for, you know, this new age of cooking. And one of the things I mentioned is, you know, never to use cooking wine in your cooking. I'll use whatever leftover wine I have from Shabbos. You can use an inexpensive bottle, but cooking wine from a supermarket just does not do it.
Very good. Now, I am sure that throughout your career, you must have had one or two interesting anecdotes you'd like to share with us, maybe something funny, maybe something inspiring. May we hear it?
That's a very general question. Lots of, you know, funny, inspiring things over the years. I'll share a funny story just about recipe testing for this book. So one of the things I really wanted to incorporate was a meatless meal chapter. My husband lost 95 pounds over the past 3 years, and we incorporated meatless meals into our family routine because he became vegetarian, and just because I feel like we eat so much heavy meat over Shabbos and the holidays, we all could just use a break, and plant-based meals are so in right now, just better for our bodies. So I instituted it in my family, and I wanted to put it in the book as well. I felt like a book, you know, called Millennial Kosher should have a chapter on, you know, with, you know, vegetarian and vegan options. So one of the things, I'm not a big fan of tofu, and I really wanted to, you know, try to work out a recipe just for people that like tofu. So I was like, really the only way that I think tofu is edible is if you deep fry it and give it some crunch, because tofu is known to have no texture. So I fried it, you know, like kind of like schnitzel. I put like shawarma spice in my crumbs, and I made these cubes, and I made these schnitzel subs for dinner. And I was like, well, if I can get my kids to eat it, then I know it's cookbook worthy and it will be good. So I fed it to them, and, you know, my older kids actually ate it, and I was surprised. And then my 4-year-old turned to his siblings and he said, why did mommy put a marshmallow in the schnitzel? And I was like, okay, that's it. There's no going around tofu. Tofu will be tofu no matter how you cut it. So I nixed the recipe. There's no tofu in the book. I do have a tempeh, though, which is another soy-based protein. But it has more of a texture, and I definitely prefer it. But there is no tofu in the book. So I just thought that was a funny story.
Very good. Any other interesting anecdotes?
I'm thinking. Well, I'll share this cool little story. It's just funny how, you know, how things work, how Hashem runs the world. So in my book, I have a very interesting take on a rotisserie chicken. It was actually, basically a chicken that's done on a stand made out of a pineapple. Now, it's a very, very creative use, and, you know, it's not something that's been done before. But what inspired it for me was this bun pan roasted chicken that was created by someone named Justin Chappell, who's a culinary director of Food & Wine magazine. And he came up with his bun pan roasted chicken, and I make it all the time, and I put it on my blog. And lots of people make it. Some people didn't want to make it because they didn't want to make their bun pan meat because they want to be able to use it for parf cake. So I was like, I have to come up with, you know, some kind of way for people to do it without a bun pan, which is how I came up with this pineapple rotisserie chicken. Many times when I made this bun pan roasted chicken, I would tag Justin Chappell on Instagram because, I'm on social media, I'm a blogger. And he came out with a new book, and he messaged me and asked me, can I send you a copy of my book? Now, there's so many, you know, there's so many food personalities and bloggers, and I'm like, why is, you know, this unique, a kosher blogger from Brooklyn who, comparatively to some of the big, you know, bloggers out there, doesn't have, I do have a lot of followers. I have 43,000 followers, but I don't have hundreds of thousands of followers. But I was like, okay, cool. You can send me your book if I can send you my book. But he didn't know that he's actually mentioned in my book. And it was just really cool that somehow he ended up messaging me, and I was like, okay, I would love to send you a copy. So I sent him a copy of the book, and I told him to turn to page 150 where it was mentioned. But I didn't, you know, I hadn't told him anything before. And he was like so, so amazed, and he thought it was really cool, and he invited me to his book release party, which was very, 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 you know, amazing. Met a lot of really cool people from different, you know, Bon Appetit magazine and Food and Wine magazine, and it was just a really amazing opportunity. But, you know, just I thought the way that he ended up messaging me and asking me to send me his book when he was featured in my book was really a funny, really how the world works, how Hashem works in amazing ways. So,
absolutely. Now, I saw that you've contributed to the Wall Street Journal and other periodicals. How did you get in touch with them?
I didn't get in touch. I mean, they got in touch with me, with the Wall Street Journal. What happened was I did this recipe for poutine latkes, which is a riff on the, you know, national dish of Quebec, which is a famous poutine, which is like gravy smothered French fries. And I decided to turn it into a latke, and I did this gravy smothered latkes. And apparently the Wall Street Journal was, you know, very into the idea of poutine. They once ran an article about it, and they were doing an article on latkes, and, you know, somehow found out about my poutine latkes because they really went viral on all the Canadian websites. And yeah, they wanted to do a feature on it. So they contacted me, and they came to my house, and I made the latkes for them. And the photographer actually, you know, real poutine is not really kosher because it has beef gravy with cheese curds in it. So he had eaten the real thing, and I was like, how does this measure up to the real thing? The photographer that had come, and he was like, well, it's pretty on point. So that was very cool. And then they actually, just a couple months ago, I was featured again there because they did an article on gefilte fish, and they wanted to know my take on the jarch. I say is a big no-no. I would never eat it. And I actually made these gefilte fish patties, which I was featured with in the Wall Street Journal again. So yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if you're real and you have good recipes, and especially if you're a blogger and there's an opportunity for recipes. So if you have a really cool idea and it can go viral, you never know where it can end up. And, you know, in that case, the Wall Street Journal was a really amazing feature.
You've also been on the Huffington Post and the Huffington Post and News 12 here in Brooklyn, among others. What did you
yes.
do on News 12, and what did you feature on the Huffington Post?
So News 12, I actually won a mushroom contest for a kosher cheeseburger, which I made out of a portobello mushroom and cheese, and I did a sun-dried tomato aioli. So I don't know what propelled me. I've never, like, entered a mushroom, any contest before, but I don't know. I think it, you know, showed up on my Facebook one day or something, and I sent it in. I totally didn't think I would win. So they came over, and they did a story about how this, you know, kosher blogger from Brooklyn made this kosher cheeseburger out of a mushroom with mushrooms. And, you know, I cooked it for them on New South Brooklyn. So that was cool. And the Huffington Post, I believe, also featured my poutine latkes, among other recipes over time.
You've been on quite a few publications, I see. You've also been on television. You've been on social media in quite a few places. How do they hear about you? Is it just through the blog?
I think, you know, you never know with social media who, you know, with Instagram stories now have really taken everything to the next level. You never know, you know, who's watching your story and what kind of connections that they have I actually last year created this allergy yarmulke because my son is anaphylactic to nuts, and I created this allergy yarmulke in collaboration with iKeepa. And somebody that watched my story, her cousin wrote for the Associated Press, so he messed. So after she watched my story, she reached out, and her cousin reached out, and he wrote a whole article about it, and ended up in newspapers all over the world. Because when you write for Associated Press, that's what happens. So it's like you never know,
right.
Like, you know, who's watching and what kind of connections you can make. It's just really, really amazing.
Now tell us a little bit about how the book idea was born, although probably that's probably easy to figure out from your blog, but how much work did it take? Times did you have to prepare something until you got just the right photograph?
The photograph or the recipes? You know, starting,
both.
I thought, yeah, both. When I started, you know, working on the book, it was probably about 2 years ago when I really started, you know, gathering all the recipes and really deciding what I would incorporate into a book and what the chapters would be. I thought that I would shoot the book as I test the recipes, but I quickly learned that that was really impossible because when you're testing a recipe properly, you want to taste it, you want to incorporate all the ingredients properly, measure it. And when you're photographing something, you might not, you know, if you're making a salad, you might only, you might strategically place leaves a certain way and not incorporate all the ingredients, not mix in the salad dressing because then it won't look very appetizing. So it's really hard to photograph as you recipe test, and I ended up, you know, doing them separately. So I did the bulk of my recipe testing actually last summer. It's almost a year ago where I did a lot of my testing, and I had a whole calendar and a whole plan, and I tested between 3 and 5 recipes a day. Some of them I had already collected, you know, over the years and saved. I never put on my blog. It was like ones that I knew if I wanted, they wrote a cookbook. And then I also put about 10% of the book, I would say, is like the most popular recipes of the blog. And everything else was, you know, brand new recipes, that ideas that I had that had to be developed. So, you know, with cooking, obviously, it's a little bit, you know, it's not as scientific as baking and all cooking, you know, all the food recipes that didn't involve baking, most of the time work out on the first try. Sometimes I need to tweak it again, but most of the time it works out. And then with baking, you know, it's more trial and error. I'm not, you know, I don't like to bake as much as I like to cook. So, you know, it was great because I was upstate in a bungalow colony, and I was able to send my dishes around and ask everyone for their opinions. So it was really great to be testing over the summer. So I did. I would make things a bunch of times, and I tried to work around Shabbos and around Yom Tovim so I didn't waste food, you know, cooking all the different Shabbos recipes on Fridays and all different Yom Tov recipes before the Yom Tov, so I could actually serve them to my family and serve them to guests and get feedback and know that, you know, if they were good or not. For about 6 weeks, I turned over my dining room into a photography studio, and I had all my props that I'd been collecting and buying for years set up, color-coded. And we basically, I shot the book in about 6 weeks, and that was another round of testing. I brought in some help. I had an assistant who cooked the recipes following exactly how I wrote it out, so if anything wasn't clear, she would ask me, and I knew to clarify it. And we shot between 6 to 8 recipes a day, through the winter, through the snow. You know, it wasn't easy, but it was definitely a challenge, but one that I really, you know, wanted to challenge myself with, and it was a great experience.
I looked for your blog, and it's beautifully done. And as you said, you have a 43,000 people, and while there were no 43,000 people at Bison and Bourbon, you couldn't possibly have fit that many. As I said before, even standing room were mostly like sardines.
Yeah.
That shows you have been very, very popular. Like your recipes. I listened to your presentation, and you have a very pleasant way of explaining it, sometimes with
Thank
humor.
You.
Basically, being there was in itself a very nice experience. Having the book in my hands has taught me a lot. I will try a lot
Thank
of the
you.
Stuff that I've seen in your books. And Atzlocha Rabba.
Thank you.
You can buy
Appreciate
this book
that.
In just any Judaica bookstore. Is it available also in other places?
It's available on Amazon and on Art Scrolls website, and slowly, you know, making its way internationally to Australia. Just got to Israel, so it's getting around.
Very good. And we are just about out of time. There is a gazillion other questions I would have liked to ask, but time is not in my favor. Okay, thank you very much for a very pleasant conversation. And let's hope we can do it again sometime.
Sure. Take care.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Until next week, when my guest will be Paula Scheuer, will be featuring her new book, The Healthy Jewish Kitchen. Thank you very much, and good night, one and all.